From a Father to a Son. Meditations on Paul's Second Epistle to Timothy by Mallory Patrick, read by herself, Part 2. The Cross and the Tongue. 2 Timothy 2, verses 14 through 16. Of these things put them in remembrance, charging them before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, but to the subverting of the hearers. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness. Now we come to some of the problems that Timothy had been encountering as a young leader. Paul will explain how to relate to contentious believers when he, Timothy, and the people under his care are supposed to remain in death for a season. Remember, all of Asia had turned against Paul. When writing this epistle, he was not in a season of popularity, of powerful moves of the Spirit, or of the vindication of the gospel. While believers were slipping away from the faith and impostors were grabbing for power, Paul was restricted by house arrest in Rome. If there was ever a time when human wisdom would assert its right for self-vindication, it would be in this moment. Now look at what Paul chooses to impart to his son in the faith. 2 Timothy 2:14. Of these things put them in remembrance, charging them before the Lord that they strive not about words to no profit, but to the subverting of the hearers. Paul introduced this imperative point in 1:13, where he exhorted Timothy to hold the words that are full of the life of Jesus. Keep the message of the cross pure. Do not wander off into ungodly or earthly tangents where arguments are sure to break out. If you are arguing over issues, you cannot possibly be grounded in the death of the cross because arguments find their root in self-vindication. They are a symptom of self being on the throne as your identity and life source. 2 Timothy 2:15. Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. A worker that is approved before God is someone who can bear up under the season of the death of the cross in the face of verbal provocation. People will accuse the son of things that are really not the issue. The tendency is to self-justify, to prove that you are in the right, or at least innocent. It is to release the knowledge of good and evil by trying to persuade people by use of arguments and profitless conversation. But the worker that is presented before God as one who is approved gets right down to the core issue, Christ and Him crucified. Timothy was learning to impart life in his speech by directing his listeners to Christ crucified. Preaching Christ crucified, lifting up Jesus instead of reacting to the issues, cuts through all the fleshly manifestation of the talkers who are moving contrary to the cross. Here is a point that Paul brings up repeatedly in this short epistle. Pointless arguing over issues, see verse 14, and splitting hairs about things that have nothing to do with life, see verse 16. Unsettle those who are in the truth, but have yet to be established in the truth. 2 Timothy 2:16. But shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness. Instead of attacking and arguing with the talkers head on, just avoid them. Be diligent to be in the image of the crucified Lord, meaning study to show thyself approved unto God. As you continue to be made conformable to the cross in your speech, Timothy, those who are talking ungodly will continue their talk and the ungodliness that issues from it, both in them and others, will continue to grow. 2 Timothy 2:17 and 18. And their word will eat as doth a canker, of whom is Hymenaeus and Philetus, who concerning the truth have erred, saying that the resurrection is past already, and overthrow the faith of some. This is not a pretty picture. The minister is supposed to stay in death, in faith, while the disease that issues from ungodly talk spreads all around him. His faith has to be such that he will trust the Lord in the middle of this ugly situation and not put his hand to it. Distress when God's work is slipping away. In unsettling times of the sort that Timothy was experiencing, it is difficult to know who is with you and who is against you. Who in the local fellowship are the established believers giving their lives, and which ones are easily persuaded by whatever is the strongest current in that moment? On the other hand, some people emerge as strong soulish leaders during the absence of God's ordained leader. Their powers to sway other believers away from the faith and unto themselves seems unstoppable. All of these elements will cause a mounting turbulence within the local fellowships that can seem to erode whatever work has been done there by the Spirit. How distressing all of this must have been for Timothy. How helpless he must have felt. If he had already resorted to arguments and earthly reactions when dealing with subverters, it would have been no wonder. To see chaos breaking out in Paul's absence would have made him question his own leadership abilities. To see all that for which Paul had sacrificed melting away so quickly just because someone wanted a position would have been heartbreaking to someone like Timothy, who loved Paul. One could see why Timothy may have been tempted to act or react in the flesh apart from the nature of Christ. This is why Paul wrote this epistle. He knew how to move with the seasons of death and resurrection in the life of the Lord. He was confident that God's building would stand forever. And even though it was unclear to Timothy in the heat of the moment who was built in and who was not, even though it looked like they were about to lose everything they had worked for, Paul was confident that the Lord would keep his building and his own. God's sure building. 2 Timothy 2:19. Nevertheless, the foundation of God standeth sure, having this seal: the Lord knoweth them that are his. And let every one that nameth the name of Christ depart from iniquity. Even though there are anti-cross forces in motion, and the conflict and apostasy of your personal experience feels like the only truth, still there is something that is more solid and lasting underneath it all: God's foundation. The Lord has etched these inscriptions into his edifice: the Lord knows them that are his. And let every one that names the name of Christ depart from iniquity. Most likely, they are described on the cornerstone himself. Those who are truly in the family and called by God's name will depart from iniquity because the life of God is in them. It is a natural reflex for Christ in you to depart from apostasy. That is how Timothy would know whose were the Lord's and who were subverting the Lord's work. Timothy would not have to figure out who is who, and how to convince them that they need to stay with the true gospel. Those who name Christ's name will be kept by the Lord by the life of Christ within, which always departs from iniquity. While the inscriptions in 2:19 are not direct quotes from the Old Testament, it seems that they are taken from Numbers 16, verses 5 and 26, where we find the account of Korah's rebellion. So Paul was interpreting the current state of things in the local fellowships by Korah Dathan, and Abiram's act of ascribing leadership where God had not ordained it. There were those in the local fellowship who were grasping after power and position in much the same way these three men had. Numbers 16:5 says that the Lord knows those who are His. Moses spoke this to Korah when that Levite asserted that he was just as spiritual as Aaron and therefore ought to be able to minister on the same footing as Aaron. Korah had claimed that since the Lord was among Israel, they had a right to equality with leadership, and leadership should restrict themselves to allow for such equality. It seems as if Hymenaeus and Philetus were trying to build something for themselves on the ground that Christ is in them, gave them the right to rule in Paul's absence. This, of course, is a perversion of the truth of Christ and Him crucified. All in whom Christ is living will not seek to rule, but lay down their lives. The second inscription sounds a lot like Numbers 16:26, which is an exhortation to those who had been swayed by Dathan and Abiram's talk to distance themselves from these men's tents, that the people not be consumed with those self-appointed leaders. Paul was comparing the people who are being swayed by Hymenaeus and Philetus' vain and profane babbling with the people who were influenced by the talking of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Maybe there were some real believers who have embraced the true gospel, but have been recently swayed by vain and profane babblings. It is time to wake up, snap out of it, identify with Christ, and get out of the way. Separate yourselves from self-appointed leaders so that the Lord does not identify you with them. It seems that Hymenaeus and Philetus' profane and vain babbling corresponds to Korah's claim to rulership. Paul assured Timothy that their word would eat as a gangrene, which corresponds to the earth swallowing Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and all that pertained to them. Their assertions had caused confusion and turbulence within the camp. People had been swayed by the attitudes and actions of these men. Because of Moses' meekness, the Lord was able to intervene and divide the troublemakers and those whom they had persuaded from those who simply happened to be caught up in the fray because they were nearby. See Numbers chapter 16, verses 33 through 35. God's Great House. 2 Timothy 2:20. But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. God has a great house and a very large family. Some of His children have turned from the old wisdom and manner of life and have been elevated to vessels of honor because of this. The degree to which they apply the cross to themselves determines the type of usage they as a vessel will receive, and by default, the degree of honor bestowed upon them. Others have no intention of letting Jesus live in them. There is no desire to lose that Jesus and others might gain. They live contrary to the nature and eternal plan of God, even though they have received the Lord. These are still vessels in the house, but because of what they have chosen to be, those who go their own way, they have a lower place in the house. God will use Hymenaeus and Philetus all right, but not in an honorable way. They will be tools that God will use to help determine who is really the Lord's and who is not. See verse 19. 2 Timothy 2:21. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work. We say that someone can choose what kind of vessel they will be, to honor or to dishonor, because in the next verse it says that a person may purge himself. Well, purge himself of what? Of profane and vain babbling, for they are the basis of all the trouble. People speak this way to gain power for themselves and to draw men unto themselves. To apply the cross in such a way that one no longer operates in this manner will allow the Lord to elevate you to an honorable usage, laying down your life for others that Christ may come forth. The interests of youth contrary to the mind of the Son. 2 Timothy 2:22. Flee also youthful lusts, but follow righteousness, faith, charity, peace, with them that call on the Lord out of a pure heart. It does not seem that the word lusts in this verse has anything to do with sexual desire, but any fervent desire, even religious ones, that spring from Timothy as an individual person apart from Christ, if he is going to fulfill the function that the Lord has for him. To effectively care for the Lord's precious people, he cannot operate out from himself. He will have to flee youthful lusts, all of those zealous and ambitious desires that are common to all youth. The energy of a young man gives ability to implement his good ideas. Too often, however, these good ideas spring from human wisdom instead of the power that raised Jesus from the dead. Not only do we see in this verse what Timothy is to break with, we also see what he is to be joined to, those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. To flee youthful lusts is to cut himself off by the cross and instead pursue the Lord and those attributes of his nature that are befitting a servant of the Lord. He is to break with himself and the wants that spring from his individual person, and join with those who are calling on the Lord to have Christ formed in them. He must also be associated with those who do likewise. We are to seek the Lord corporately. This is where we will be changed into his image. The end of self-vindication changes conversation. 2 Timothy 2:23. But foolish and unlearned questions avoid, knowing that they do gender strifes. In 2 Timothy 2:16, Paul exhorts Timothy to shun profane and vain babbling. In verse 22, Paul encourages him to flee youthful lusts. Finally, in verse 23, Paul tells him to avoid foolish and unlearned questions. Again, the cross must be applied in a very specific area, that of the tongue and conversation. The carnal mind is intrigued by issues, analysis, the right answers, and different angles. But since all of that originates in the flesh, there will be no profit in a leader using this kind of wisdom to help God's people get free from the snares in which they find themselves. One of the primary core drives of an individual is self-vindication, which always desires to appear righteous in their own eyes and in the eyes of others. We aren't even aware that we are doing it. So many of the issues that people bring up are really for this purpose. Their self-vindication hangs on the outcome of the discussion. If the other person in the conversation meets them on the carnal ground of the issue, the outcome will certainly be strife because everyone is trying to vindicate themselves, whether they are aware of it or not. As a servant who operates in the Spirit of the Son, Timothy cannot be on the carnal ground of issues because to justify himself will hurt the Lord's people. And to allow the person who is bringing up the issues to justify themselves will prevent them from coming out from under the influence of Hymenaeus and Philetus. So, he must fully break with this way of relating, by the cross, that he might properly release the word which will cause those in his care to be shaped in the image of the Son. We can see a theme developing in how a son of God is to relate to others. He is to shun, flee, and avoid. Here are the definitions of those words. 2 Timothy 2:16, shun profane and vain babblings. Shun, to steer clear, walk around something, keeping a wide perimeter between you and it. 2 Timothy 2:22, flee also youthful lusts. Flee, to keep from doing something by avoiding it because of its potential damage. 2 Timothy 2:23, but foolish and unlearned questions avoid. Avoid, to avert something by request or entreaty, a diplomatic way to cover the other person. It is in Jesus' nature to not attack another believer on the ground of their own arguments, but to approach their heart with the love that is from above. If the other believer belongs to the Lord, they will respond favorably to this approach because the Spirit has deposited something in their hearts that responds to Jesus. In union with Christ and detached from personal offense. 2 Timothy 2:24 through 26. And the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient, in meekness instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, and that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will. This short passage delves into the specifics of how a son of God by Christ is to relate to those who have been ensnared. The description is how God the Father relates to all of his children. He is aware of the depth of selfishness in our hearts, and yet his love remains untouched by it, above it. Our selfish core does not get him stirred up or frustrated. He does not react in anger to our selfishness. He works with us gently and at a slow pace to disentangle us from the snare of the enemy. These verses show us that nature of our loving Heavenly Father embodied in his vessel Paul, who is helping his son in the faith grow up to be a vessel of his father's nature. What Paul is asking of Timothy is a description of the nature of Christ with reference to how he treats believers and their shortcomings. If Timothy is to work with God and for God to help his people along, he will have to take on God's nature and work with him in his timing and season, detached from the impatience and frustrations that always accompany the striving and methods of the flesh. This is why it is so important for Timothy to flee youthful lusts. Instead of getting all emotionally entangled with people's lack of Christ, he must stand with the Lord for the people, utterly detached from whatever disappointment he might feel about their failures. Also, he must cease to take their failings personally, even when those failings affect him personally. He must be separated from the hurt within when he sees them contributing to the destruction of Paul's work, or when wayward believers trespass against him. He cannot see the people from a personal stance at all, because that is the source of lust and the viewpoint that comes from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Seeing the Lord's people from a personal stance will always result in personal offenses, hurts, and anger. The life of Jesus cannot flow from a vessel who is operating independently of Christ, rendering the believer unable to help those who are out of the way. But if the believer cuts himself off from himself by the cross and stands with God for the people, if he remains in the love that is from above, if you will, and takes on these attributes, he will be able to lead people out of the snare. Verse 26 shows us how God sees those who are his, who are still influenced by Hymenaeus and Philetus. These believers may look like enemies of the cross. They may have done and said destructive things that are tearing down Paul's work. The Father's view of the opposers. Timothy may have been upset, angry, and hurt by these people. He may have taken it personally because they had done something wrong that directly affected him. But the Father's view of these people is different. His feelings are not hurt. He is not personally offended at what they have done wrong. He sees them as captives of the devil. Furthermore, God is blaming the devil, not the captives. The Father's view is that these poor people had no choice in the matter, and that the devil is the perpetrator who preys upon believers who are ignorant and therefore unable to escape from his deceptive snares. This is a very gracious view. It is equivalent to Jesus saying, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Luke 23:34. But it is God's view, fueled by love and compassion for his own, and is therefore devoid of all petty offenses. Taking on this view will help sons take on the image of the Son, who will always lay down his life for God's sheep. See the nature of the Lamb at work in Paul, and how he wants to impart this Jesus way to Timothy, the next generation of Lamb conformers. The Spirit of the Son frees the captive. It is the tendency of the carnal believer to react to what is wrong in another believer. The knowledge of good and evil rules his thinking, so in seeing what is wrong in another, he lifts himself up into the place of corrector and fixer. Jesus does not work this way. He brings life into the situation. He comes as a servant to the believer who is wrong. Jesus approaches that person in subjection. This is the meekness, and offers himself as the reality that they need. This spirit disarms a person, providing the contrast between his own ways and the nature of Christ. If there is any heart at all within the person who is wrong, they will be drawn to Jesus, and they will repent of their deceptions. The light of the nature of Jesus that has been shined into the situation by Timothy the Son might even assist them in getting themselves out of the devil's deceptive entanglements. The cross working in a Lamb believer will cause him to cut off the attitude of lifting himself up and trying to fix another believer. The resurrection life manifests in a meek and gentle way that approaches people in a humble and unoffensive manner. This is what we do when it is Jesus living in us. This is how Jesus saves believers who are going the wrong way. There is hope for believers who are gone out of the way because someone crucified comes to them and lets the crucified shine. In the absence of God's leader, people will act like leaders and play to the susceptibilities of the flock. If believers only learn to attach to their father figure, they will be led away when darkness falls. It is simply unwise to hang on to one's father in the Lord. His words must be implanted in the heart as one's own viewpoint, thereby enabling the believer to walk out the expression of his heart. Some people are the Lord's even though they are presently following Hymenaeus and Philetus. They do have a heart for Jesus, but they will not be able to depart from iniquity all by themselves. They will need someone who serves by the Spirit of the Son to help them do it. Timothy must be completely cut off from himself by the cross if he is going to be ready to help these people. He will have to lay down himself and his desires, interests, and agendas. unbelieving believers. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 4. This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Some people, however, do not belong to the Lord. They may operate in Christian circles, go to church, listen to the sermon, and take notes. They may refrain from obvious vices, such as cursing or smoking. They may participate in programs. Or they may be part of the group that has been influenced by Hymenaeus and Philetus. They are not the Lord's straying people, the ones Timothy is supposed to be helping. The list of qualities in these verses points to a nature other than Christ operating in those who claim to be the Lord's people. Timothy is to know that no matter how much of the nature of Christ he displays to people such as these, they will not turn from their ways. Not everybody is drawn by the nature of Jesus. Also, compare this group of people in 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 4, these self-men, with the group of people with whom Timothy is to associate in chapter 2, verse 22. The latter group is seeking to learn Christ and be conformed to his image. 2 Timothy 3, verse 5. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. These ones who are not the Lord's will possess a pious, religious outward structure to their lives. On the outside, they will look like devoted believers. In reality, they have deliberately rejected Lamb life, the way of the cross. Though outwardly religious, inwardly there is no intention of ever laying down their lives, going into death, for life to come forth. In other words, they have denied the very power of godliness. True godliness is fueled by the nature of Christ within giving itself for others. Christ crucified is the power, but they have no intention of ever embracing that. So they are left with an outward image that is hollow because it has no substance. Paul is telling Timothy that it is all right to have nothing to do with such people. In fact, since they really have no intention of identifying in Jesus' cross, he ought to have nothing to do with them at all. The last days. Let us briefly mention one more point before moving on. In expounding upon these self-men, Paul is describing what happens in what he calls the last days. Jesus was the first to experience the last days, which occurred immediately before going to the cross. His ministry was in decline, and there arose some dissension among his inner circle, the disciples. Jesus called it the hour of the religious leaders and the power of darkness. See Luke 22:53. Jesus was living in Paul, so what happened to Jesus was happening to the apostle. Just as Jesus experienced a decline in popularity before his death, even so, Paul was experiencing that same season. He is interpreting the last days for Timothy so that the young man would not be swayed by the death of the cross the way Jesus' disciples had been. The last days will always be defined by Christ in a vessel manifesting the death of the cross. But what will manifest simultaneously is an uprising of darkness among God's people, so-called. In the following verses, Paul goes on to exhort Timothy to continue in the nature of Christ, no matter what the season, as we shall see shortly. To be continued.